Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
But people like to grow. And if your company can grow and they can grow with you, great. If the company's doing okay but not growing, they're probably going to outgrow you at some point. I think you just got to accept it.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. How's your energy today? Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. Today's guest is Perry Timms. He is the founder and chief energy officer of People and Transformational HR. You're going to learn a lot about having an energized workplace and some great advice if it's just not feeling like your culture is where it needs to be. Perry Timms, welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. I'm very excited to get to know you today.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I'm so glad to be here. I mean, any chance to explore what's going on in the world of work is always good for me.
I'm curious, before we dive in, how do you explain what you do for a living?
Yeah, I mean, I make a point of saying that I'm an HR practitioner, so I sort of lead with that. And then I do explain on top of that, because most people think that's either hiring people or firing people.
Yeah.
And I make a deliberate attempt to go into the realms of saying, well, I'm looking at the way organizations are designed and the way that people experience their work. And they kind of get a little bit more intrigued, I would say, from that, because the perception of HR is very mechanical and administrative. They're like, what? So you have to pull all these levers and make all these calls? It's like, yeah. And even invite their younger children to start thinking about HR as a career.
Oh, wow, yeah. There's not a lot of like younger people thinking, I want to go into HR. You know what I mean? You spoke a little bit about that already, but what is your... I don't know what the right way to say it is, but what is your sort of pitch to a young person that might be thinking they're not sure what they want to do? Why would they want to do this?
It's a terrific observation, and you're absolutely right, because the perception is still that HR is an administrative function and it kind of builds rules to stop people misbehaving, right? So I think that is still the perception. But what I see, particularly younger people being fascinated by, are things like purpose, things like the environment, things like communities, things like social good, right? I see them talking about that a lot. And I do a fair bit of lecturing, so I can sort of attest to that, because I get students in front of me. And then when I say, but you do know that HR has a strong footprint in the way things are designed, in things like connecting to communities, in social mobility programs, in inclusion, in career paths, in helping people find out who they are, they're like, really? So my pitch is really that. Yeah. It is that, you know, we're the kind of orchestrator sometimes of people's destiny, and creating the conditions in an organization that people can succeed and develop and enhance what they're all about. So that is the interesting side of it. And that kind of wins them over, I will say. They suddenly become much more interested in that. Yeah.
That's great. Which is true. I think that, you know, managing the perception versus reality is important. So I noticed you used the word energy or energetic a lot. Isn't like part of your title is energetic?
It is.
And then you have a book around it. I'm just curious about that word and why that word is so important to you and what it means to you. And can you talk a little bit about that?
I sure can. I've often been described, Joe, as somebody who's very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And that I'm the sort of person who can energize others and brings energy into things. And it was almost like, oh, I didn't really know I did. I think I'm just being me, right? But I guess when you assess yourselves against other people and in situations, you do think, oh, yeah, I am perhaps the most energetic person in the room. Why is that? I think there's something about the fact that I can normally find something of interest, even in perhaps the most dull situation, that it's almost like, well, you can let the situation kind of deplete your energy, or you can find something that sparks you, and then that energy comes through, and it just makes it much more enjoyable. But as you get older, you realize energy is linked to quite a lot of factors, and some of it is about the kind of psychology of you and the things around you that can impair that. So I studied it a bit and looked at it and thought, wow, there are lots of contributing factors that suppress, waste, channel, exaggerate our energies. So when I wrote the book, that was deliberately looking at the fact that employee engagement levels were low, stress and absence were high. And I was thinking, these are people who didn't want that outcome, but have got it anyway. What's going on? Why is their energy so wasted and depleted? Yeah. And I kind of deduced it's the systems that they're working in that conspire against them in a way. So I wanted to codify how we as a profession, but we in the workforce, could just unleash that energy. And it almost feels like, you know, it doesn't matter how much time you've got or how much money you've got, as long as you've got energy, that seems to be a really powerful force. So, yeah, I'm fascinated by it. And I am sort of pleased to have that in my title as well, because it is a bit symbolic of who I am.
Yeah, for sure. What's your best advice to, I would feel like there's probably a lot of people that are leading teams or businesses. Think of a small team of, I don't know, 6 to 20 people. And there used to be energy and you don't know what happened as the leader, but suddenly you go to work and you're like, nobody, it's gone. It went away. What happened? What's your best advice as a leader when you start to feel that? I know I felt that at times. And what's the best advice for a leader that starts to sense we had it, but it's waning?
I think you're right. I think there is something about naming it and kind of bringing it into the front of people's minds in a very open, safe discussion kind of environment. It's almost like, look, there was a time when we were showing these energetic traits, and I look around and I feel it myself. I don't see it now. And then there is a sort of a diagnosis of that. But I don't think you should dwell on that too much, because people might say, well, the pressure's there and it's a bit boring and the tech doesn't work. And what, there could be loads of reasons why. So I think it's good to table them, but then I think it's good to then sort of just go back and just go, what brings you to life then? And really start to get people to go, I really love it when this happens. And I get sparked when these things go, and they'll start to describe perhaps the opposite of what's going on, but just something that's missing in their everyday life, in their routine, whatever it might be. And I think it's then being able to work with, okay, well, how do we get that back then? How do we get that back within the circumstances we've got? And my experience of that is people rise to that challenge. They get very creative and ingenious and experimental, and suddenly that creates energy. And then you're like, oh, in the pursuit of recovering our energy, we've become energized about that pursuit. And it's almost like a little quantum thing that builds. So I've been asked to come and help teams that are flat on morale quite a lot. And that's kind of what I do. Face the reality, but then just awaken the possibilities, because they're normally there just suppressed and a bit lost. Yeah.
That's great. What about the flip side? Let's say that you are, you have energy. You're naturally that way, maybe, or you have it around, even around your job, but you're on a team that isn't, or maybe you sort of feel like you've tried to lead up and it's not working. What's your best advice around how maybe discerning, can I help this team or do I need to move on? Like, how do you help folks like in that situation?
I've been there as well. Yeah. And I mean, there are a couple of things going on there, isn't there? It's actually quite debilitating for you if you feel like you're the cheerleader all the time and nobody else is. You're like, wow, I'm putting in my best here and nothing's happening. So that can be quite disheartening for you and not a great space for you. There is also something about the fact that if people are just, I don't know, a bit stuck, or they want to be serious and you're trying to lift spirits and be energetic, they're like, you just become annoying and it kind of bounces off and they almost resent you for it. So there's something about channeling it. And I suppose with those sort of environments, I think it's about being deliberate and choosy about when you want to go high energy, right?
Yeah.
And some of that is, I think, just when the team perhaps can talk about, and I'll use this phrase, but it's a well-used phrase, what's going on with our culture? Mm. Not our behaviors, not our attitudes, but just culture, elevate it up to culture. Yeah. And people will say, we're not feeling it in the minute. And it's almost like, what's going on there? So again, a bit of diagnosis, but I think take it away from people individually. So you're not labeling people as, boring, miserable or whatever, because I don't think that works. Try and elevate it up for the shared climate that's been created that you're struggling to cope with and they are perhaps just a bit lost in. And then the culture thing becomes something that people can kind of get behind and go, we're not so inventive anymore, are we? Well, let's find something we can be inventive about. We haven't done any charitable giving. Let's do something like that and just create almost side hustles, distractions, alternatives to the kind of gray norm. And that seems to break that cycle. And you can then put your energy into those little side hustles so you don't annoy people.
Interesting. You know, not being in HR, I'm noticing now that it's become more and more, I guess, of a modern way of viewing it as sometimes we just need to accept people are here for a season and we're actually preparing them to go somewhere else someday. As HR professionals, how do we think about the folks that we lead in their careers as it relates to our organization?
You're so right, you know, because I think the views on attrition and loss and, you know, retention and loyalty have been challenged and have kind of been reframed by quite a lot of the world's turbulence and so on. And you're right, there was this whole concept, wasn't it, called the Great Resignation, when people did move a lot and it was all in a compressed period of time. And I guess the market has flipped back so that, you know, although unemployment rates in the US are pretty low at the moment, there's still some skills shortages and so on. So I totally get that it's a very unpredictable market. But I think we've got more comfortable with a couple of things that we perhaps held true in the past, but we don't now. Just because somebody's there for a long time doesn't mean they are still the loyal high performer. They could be stuck. They could be coasting. They're not necessarily your A player. It could be, but I think we've questioned that a little bit.
Yeah.
And those people who have ambition may not be able to fulfill that with you. But while you've got them, they could take you to good places and spark good things. And you don't want to ignore while they're there just because they won't be there forever. So I think we've got more comfortable with perhaps transience or separation or choice. And I do see some companies who kind of actively encourage it and say, yeah, go somewhere else. But you know what? If you want to come back, we're probably likely to be quite favorable if it's on good terms and you're open about your transition to another place and don't take the company's secrets with you and all that kind of stuff. So I think maybe we've matured the relationship a little bit. We don't think about it as hoarding possessions anymore. We are trying to navigate people's choices and options in a way that I think makes sense to them and us, and we get the best of the deal while we can. I think we're more comfortable with that, and I don't think that's made people any more flippant or disloyal. I think they've just recognized that life has a lot of choices and they want to exercise as much as they can. So I love companies who do try really hard to say, look, we've got a lot of things you could do here. You could go work there. And they almost encourage people to be a bit internally mobile. I think that's perhaps the mid-ground that I think works well. But of course, that depends on size. If you've got the size, you can do that. If you haven't, then you might not be able to fulfill that. But people like to grow. And if your company can grow and they can grow with you, great. If the company's doing okay but not growing, they're probably going to outgrow you at some point. I think you just got to accept it.
Obviously, this is a leadership podcast. I'm sure you have some advice on what's the best way to lead. So if you're a president or CEO or whatever, any thoughts on that dynamic and relationship on how to actually lead HR professionals?
Yeah. I would like to invite CEOs to really raise the bar on expectations from their CHRO or HR director or VP of HR, because I think when we look at the challenges in the world of work, right, we've got technology coming at us at an increasing rate with things like AI, which will probably change lots of jobs. You're going to need a chief people officer or an HR director who can really, really understand what that means to both leverage the value that comes from it and shift the skills to where they need to be, right? So I saw some statistics from the World Economic Forum that looked at job shift through AI, and it was something like 89 million jobs lost and 63 million jobs created, right? That's the kind of shift. So on paper, you look at it and think, that's not too bad, is it? Because there's a lot created, but they're very different. They're not low-level administration. They're not unskilled. So we've got to think, hang on a minute, what are those new roles and what does that require of people? High interpersonal skills, emotional intelligence, creativity. We might have to train people now so that in 5-10 years' time when their work is gone, they're capable of shifting to a new, higher demand, high touch, new kind of role. That's a big ask of your HR team, and they've got to start getting you ready for that. So that's where I think CEOs and HR can come together and kind of go, we've got to shorten the learning curve so that we're as prepared as we possibly can for all of these kinds of disruptions and shifts. Because if we don't, we could collapse pretty quickly. We could not exist pretty quickly. We get bought out pretty quickly. And you want to strengthen your position no matter what that is all about. And I think skills is the ticket to exploiting technology and future-proofing. So I think that's where I'd say HR and CEOs need to be really strong together.
Yeah, that's great. And I meet a lot of folks who have evolved maybe at their first or second employment area to a place of leadership and realizing that they're good leaders and now trying to discern when is it time to move on? If you were a career coach for an individual, would you help folks decide, how do you know when my time here is over and where to go next and what to do if you're itchy? You know what I mean?
Totally that. And again, I think it's that there are some multiple factors to consider here, which is, again, company growth, your growth. Are they aligned? Can you shift? Can you diversify? Because I think if the answer to that is yes, then it is almost like, well, you built up some social capital here. You've got some familiarity and you know what has got you here. And then you just need to work out how you can get there, wherever there is within that domain. If the company isn't growing or the market is changing and they are diversifying, I'll give you an example, right? Energy. So if you work in leadership in energy and you're in legacy, oil and gas, you're thinking now renewables and so on. And companies like that are splitting into rundown, legacy, grow, renewables. So you've got a choice there. It's like, do I want to be part of a rundown legacy and then walk off with a nice little handshake? Or do I want to jump in the new space, learn new skills, new technologies, new ways of doing things? So I think that is another thing to think about. Can I learn and transition into what are going to be new markets? So I think there's that. And then I think the other thing really is about, you know, what do I want to leave when I step away, right? How comfortable am I here in doing that? Or is there another way I can do that? Mm. And for some people, they'll create a portfolio, right? They'll carry on leading in the environment they're in, but they'll do non-executive, advisory, educational, maybe even set up a little entrepreneur spin-out thing. And it's like, I'm just going to have more to do, but I'm going to stay where I am. So, and that's a perfectly acceptable choice. So it isn't always, do I want to be the global VP anymore? Mm. Yeah. I think that kind of one line is now quite squiggly and blurry and multifaceted. And I did some research last year, actually, about leadership. And really what everybody was coming back to was, you now have to be really good at versatility. That's kind of like your playing card. If you're versatile as a leader, that's a pretty good thing to be. So how do you do that? Well, you have to be versatile in order to learn versatility, right? Yeah. So I think that's what I would say to people. It's like, don't go deep in just knowing P&L or product development. Be versatile. Yeah. Know a lot about everything, and then I think you can spread your bets.
Our time's already up. I've sure enjoyed getting to meet you, Perry. And I know.
Yay.
We're so interesting. It goes so fast. It's weird. I know there's people out there that would love to connect with you or read your books or whatever. What's the best way for folks to stay in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on LinkedIn, so very active on there. So do find me, as you've just done. And there's also the website PTHR, papatangohotelromeo.co.uk. You can get me there. Okay. I used to be on Twitter, now known as X, but that's kind of died off a little bit. But yeah, LinkedIn's the best place.
Okay. Find Perry Timms on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the LeaderCast family. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Much appreciated.
In today's ultra-competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. Invest in your all-star employees and attract new top talent to join them with LeaderCast 365.